Hey, welcome to the Quick Pass Podcast, where you don't know who you are.
And neither do we.
Well, it's that day.
It is, my friend.
Our third anniversary.
Yes, number three and number nine have been on many, many roads. We've traveled down many topics of conversation, and we've made it to our third Super Bowl.
Third Super Bowl.
Yep. 2 years ago, roughly to this date, when the New York Giants beat the New England Patriots.
Yep, I think.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's definitely what happened.
Well, I believe you, but if you asked me, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
You wouldn't know, yeah. That was the episode where you picked the Patriots because you said they cheat, and they're bound to win because they're cheaters.
Yep.
Which you turned out to be wrong.
Yeah, but every once in a while.
I went Giants, turned out to be right, but I really didn't know anything, just a lucky guess. And then last year, it was the Ravens and the 49ers. I picked 49ers, turned out to be right. You picked that the Raiders would ransack the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And that they would overtake everyone in sort of a Ric Flair, WWF, WWE sort of move.
And I think we were all a little bit surprised that that didn't happen.
Yep.
Just a little bit.
There was some significant feedback from those predictions. People found it funny.
Yeah.
They liked the idea of the Raiders ransacking the Super Bowl. So I'll be honest with you. I've been a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit stressed thinking about my Super Bowl prediction for this weekend because I feel like I'm batting 1,000.
Yeah.
And last year, I even picked one of the Super Bowl teams before the season even began. And so, like, I feel like I'm kind of hot, and I don't want to let people down now. So I've been going back and forth in my head all week, knowing that we were going to be potting here on Super Bowl Sunday. And I'm still a little bit up in the air if you want to know the truth on my pick.
I got you. Well, I can see how you'd feel that way. I feel the opposite. I've got nothing to lose.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So.
You're over.
Yeah.
Well, we usually start with asking what you know about the Super Bowl that's upcoming, because that's quite entertaining, seeing how number three here, friends, is not a big sports fan.
No.
He likes the sports.
I like sports.
Just don't follow them.
Yeah, don't watch them, don't really follow them, don't know when they're on, wouldn't watch them if they were and I knew. Getting into some automobile racing maybe a little bit. Not NASCAR, but I could maybe kind of watch some of that. But even that would wear me out. I don't have the time to keep up. All I know right now is that Michael Schumacher's in a coma, and we're all hoping that he gets out, because that's kind of a tragedy.
Yeah, that's bad times for anyone to be in a coma.
Yeah, for sure. But as far as the Super Bowl this year, it's kind of disappointing, because I've actually, this year I have actively avoided any conversations about football or the Super Bowl, so that I could come in fresh, so I wouldn't be tainted by the media, you know, and I wouldn't have their narratives in my head for how things are going to unwind. But I have not been able to avoid the fact that I know both teams in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, which is disappointing to me, because we spoke during the week, and I purposely didn't really say anything about it, because I didn't want to give you anything, because one of my favorite parts is you coming in and being oblivious to who's in the Super Bowl, which, I don't know. What do you think? 75-80% of Americans have to know who's in there. Maybe even higher. Maybe even 90%+ know who's in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But you, the last 2 years, you didn't know.
And right.
Wait, you knew one team last year.
Yes.
Because you found out about the Harbaugh brothers. So this year, you tell us, number three, who's playing in the big game?
We've got the Seattle Seahawks, and I'm a little bit worried that I'm wrong.
No, you're right. They're in there.
We've got the Seattle Seahawks and the Denver Broncos.
Uh-huh.
And, well, when I was... I know that there's a Manning
there
in
is.
The Super Bowl.
Peyton.
I thought it was Peyton because he's the older one, and Eli, I think, plays for the Colts.
Giants.
All right, good. I don't know. I'm happy because I was sitting there, I was going through this last night as I'm laying in bed. I'm like, I think he played, oh man, do I know that much about football now? Like, so apparently I don't. I'm just confidently wrong about one thing, which to me is better. And then, so I started thinking, like, well, who's going to win? I know that we've got a Manning on one side. I don't know anything about the other side.
Got no knowledge about the Seahawks.
No knowledge at all.
Okay.
So you know me, I'm going to the mascot.
All right.
Which mascot can beat the other mascot? And I'm thinking, you've got a Bronco.
Yeah.
Big, tough animal.
Absolutely.
I've never seen a Seahawk. But I don't imagine they're that large. But a hawk is kind of, it's a predatory animal, a raptor.
Versatile. Yeah.
And so then I'm thinking like, well, the hawk's got the advantage of flight. So they can fly in and it could probably scratch up and maybe, you know, it might even be able to peck out the eyes of the bronco.
Hit and run. Yeah. Guerrilla warfare tactics. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Scratch it up. But would it ever really be able to kill the bronco?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. But unless it made an error and got on the ground, the bronco would be almost powerless against the hawk.
He'd have a hard time catching it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's a big, powerful animal, but not a lot of diversity in things it can do to attack. It can kick, but it's probably going to miss. Unless it steps on it or somehow bites it and, you know, smashes it. That's all a horse can really do to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're almost at a stalemate because I don't think the hawk has what it takes to just really give that crippling blow. But I don't think that the bronco has what it takes to get the hawk in the position to deal out its crippling blow.
So you're saying mascot-wise, this is a pretty even match.
This is an even match, and I'm thinking we're going to have some OT.
Okay, wow.
Because of the mascot.
Oh, all right, that's a bold prediction.
Yeah.
So you're predicting overtime because it's that even.
Wow. And then really, I have to think, you know, in my gut, I would go Denver Broncos because I knew a long time ago they were good. We're talking probably 10 years ago.
Okay.
So I knew at one time they were good 10 years ago. So I'm thinking, well, they're probably still good. But mascot-wise, there's a chance that a talon or a sharpened beak could potentially get at an artery in the neck. And so eventually in OT, that will lead to the downfall of the Denver Broncos. My Super Bowl prediction in OT... A near-miss victory for the Seattle Seahawks.
A near-miss victory.
Yep. They almost missed it.
Oh, but they do win.
They do win.
They do
but
win.
But they almost lose.
Okay, you're going Seahawks. Wow. Mm-hmm. Now,
logic is pretty sound.
No, it's very good. I agree with almost everything you said about the mascots. It's almost like if you put the Mongols in a war against, like, a medieval knight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the knight would be able, if he could just get a hold of the Mongol, he would kill him. But can he get a hold of him? That's
exactly
what I was thinking through
exactly
your whole thing. You know, that's the thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't think about the mascots at all. I've been thinking about the teams.
That's weird.
Yeah, at a very young age, watching Super Bowls in the 90s, I learned that a good defense generally beats a good offense.
Okay.
Generally. There's a few exceptions, like the Rams won a Super Bowl without a very good defense, but their offense was completely stacked, record-setting offense. Mm-hmm. You know, that's usually the exception to the rule. You know, if the offense is superb, then it will beat even a good defense. And the Broncos this year have that superb offense. They've been setting records. Mm-hmm. I think Peyton Manning had 55 touchdowns this season.
Wow.
If you think about that, 16 games, 55 touchdowns, that's almost insane. And the Seahawks have the number one defense in the league this year. So my football background knowledge says you go for the defense in the big game. Defense beats the offense, but there's that exception with the Broncos having a superior offense compared to most. So then I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm back to even again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going, okay, last year I picked the Ravens because I said the game means more to the Ravens last year. They were an older team. Some of their veterans were on the way out. Might be their last shot. We knew that. The Broncos are that team this year. Peyton Manning came back from a neck surgery, and a lot of people thought he'd never play again. Here he is back in the Super Bowl. They fit that criteria. So there's two that are kind of in the Broncos' favor now, mm-hmm. right? They've got that exceptionally good offense. And they've got the older team where the game probably means more. There's a lot of guys on the Seahawks that are 25, 26 years old. They're a younger team. In the back of their mind, they might be thinking, I'll make it back.
Yeah.
So I'm leaning Broncos. And then I read this article by Peter King, who's a great journalist. Even if you don't like football, you can respect the man for his writing. He writes about football, phenomenal writer. And he said he's going Broncos because he says when the Broncos go five wide receivers or they spread the field with their tight ends, that there will always be one guy that the Seahawks can't guard. And he's right. But the more I got to thinking about it, the more I thought, they won't be able to do that because that means they have to block Seattle's pass rush mm-hmm. without any help, without any tight ends or running backs helping, and I don't think they can do it.
Hmm.
So despite my inclinations about my little rules that I have, I'm going Seahawks because I think if the Broncos go spread, They won't be able to handle the Seahawks pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
And that defense of the Seahawks will make a play or two here that the normal defense doesn't make against Peyton Manning and that team because they're really that good. So I'm going Seahawks in a close one as well. I'm not going to have the balls enough to call overtime like you did, but I'm going Seahawks. And okay. It heavily deliberated in my mind. I mean, I debated that constantly.
Yeah, as have I. I just don't know, though, if we can be on the same side.
I know. It is odd.
We rise together and we fall together, and I don't, you know, usually I kind of just want to balance you out by going with the other guy.
Yeah.
So,
you shouldn't
know,
have predicted yours first.
I shouldn't have gone first.
Because I actually, you know, because thought about it.
Maybe that Seahawk will fly right in front of it, and it'll just take a Boom. Chunk out of it like an apple.
It gets a hunk of the wing.
Yeah.
Now the Seahawk loses its mobility.
Goodbye. You're not going to outrun a Bronco.
No, absolutely not. So that's the thing right now.
Yeah.
Did you hear anything a couple weeks ago about the Seahawks?
No. I've only recently kind of heard, partially because I've started listening to NPR on my way to work, so I don't have to plug in my phone and listen to podcasts. Just listen to the news.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this out. Well, go ahead with your point. I'll tell you something about the news.
Okay. Because there was a thing from the Seahawks championship game where they beat the 49ers.
Okay.
Which was, I actually predicted 49ers were going to be in the Super Bowl this year. I was wrong. But they were basically like one play away. They had like 30 seconds left. They throw it to their best receiver. He's being guarded by Seattle's best defender, who's Richard Sherman. And Richard Sherman makes this awesome play where he leaps back and tips the ball to one of his teammates who picks it off for an interception. End of the game. They interview him right after the game, Richard Sherman. And they go, "Richard, take me through that last play." And he's getting interviewed by a chick on the field right after the game. I mean, like, the final buzzer just went off probably 15, 20 seconds ago. And he starts yelling. He goes,
"Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me."
"Who is talking about you?"
"Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or you're going to set it for you real quick. L.O.B.
All right, before... And Joe, back over to you.
Heard about this.
Yeah, I thought for sure this would have made it to you because out of nowhere, like, Richard Sherman was a name that football fans knew, but the average person did not know him. All of a sudden, he's all over Twitter. He's all over Facebook. People are just issuing, like, declarations about him as a person and all this stuff from this 30-second clip that they see at the end of the game.
When he's running high.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like, the thing about sports is they can bring out the best in you, and they can bring out the worst in you.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've been in fights because of sports. I've been kicked out of leagues because of sports. All sorts of bad things can happen in sports, but also a lot of good things, too. Yeah. Well, they caught him when he... Running hot is a perfect statement. And some of the comments turned racist, like typical N-word. Mm-hmm. That's how those guys are, all yep. that sort of stuff. Which... I'm not going to sit here and say it was a classy response by Richard Sherman. It certainly wasn't. But there's a lot of bad blood between them because the 49ers coach was Richard Sherman's college coach, and Richard Sherman felt like he didn't ever really help him out. And so he was happy to have beat him. Mm-hmm. And there was some trash talk between Crabtree and Sherman that goes back for a while. So, but people were going, how is he going to sit there and talk about he's the best cornerback in the game? And I'm thinking, well, he kind of is. Mm-hmm. And he just made this awesome play. But how about we don't send the chick down there to interview him right after the game when he's just gotten done with, you know, 35 minutes of bashing heads.
Right.
That's what these guys do. They fly into each other at 20 miles an hour mm-hmm. for a living.
Right.
You have to wind yourself up a little bit to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain positions like quarterback that don't.
Yeah.
And that's usually who they grab to interview. They usually grab the quarterback right after game. The quarterback's job during the game is to not get hit. He's
right.
not looking to smash into other people and rev himself up to an extreme level. These other players have to do that. It makes you a little bit nutty. So I was really thought the whole thing was kind of unfair, a little bit racist, and I knew you had to have heard about it just because the average people were commenting about
yeah.
this guy and judging him as a person based off this one 12-second sound clip.
Right. I did hear about that. And, you know, it's just Muhammad Ali-esque. You know, and I have to think that if I just scored that play and I had just had that victory and that rush, I would have that same egomaniacal attitude of like, and I've had that about things that like, are not even that amazing. You know, you have a small victory mm-hmm. that you've been trying for, and all of a sudden you're king of the world. And, you know, so whatever. Yeah, and yeah, judging a whole person based on a 30-second thing they said, you could judge me on something I said, and tomorrow I might say the exact opposite of what I thought. Or I say something stupid, someone says something to me, and then all of a sudden I rethink myself. All of a sudden I'm on a new page. I don't even think that stupid way anymore.
Yeah, I also feel like a little bit of it was taken out of context.
Oh, I'm sure.
You're taking a guy in a competitive context, and then the interview's no longer a competitive context, mm-hmm. but he's still in competition mode.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you or I probably say 5 or 6 things every day that if you took them in just a slightly different context would look totally inappropriate, totally rude,
yeah.
whatever the case may be. And, you know, you want to hear the previous conversation. Right. We don't know what Michael Crabtree and Richard Sherman were saying to each other Absolutely. All day. We don't know what they said to each other 2 years ago.
Right.
So, like, you catch them all revved up like that. But I knew that was something from football that would have made your life because everyone had a fucking comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
I go to work and people are commenting on it. People that I just casually interact with are commenting on it. People who aren't even hardcore football fans are commenting on it.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, this is excessive. Let's just tone it down a little bit and take it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about it, he writes for Sports Illustrated, Richard Sherman does in his free time. Found out that he graduated at Stanford in his 3rd year, came back for his 4th year of college football, and started work on his master's degree, then got drafted the year after. Like, and, you know, people are saying, oh, typical N-word, and
yeah.
all these derogatory
yeah, that's
things
very
about
typical.
Him. Yeah, that's if anything, that's atypical for any human being to be able to graduate Stanford in 3 years and start your master's in your 4th.
Right.
None of us could do it. The people listening to this, almost all of you couldn't do that, let alone do it while playing football.
Right.
And typical this, typical that. And I thought it was really kind of sad. It's when humanity stops a moment and it just takes these little jarring things where Richard Sherman's yelling and screaming and people don't expect it. And I get all that. But those little things like scrape back our veneer that we work so hard to cover ourselves with
yep.
of propriety and civilization and all that stuff. And it just scrapes it back a little bit. And then it turns into racism. It turns into judgmental things,
mm-hmm.
which we all say we don't want people to do to us. We try to teach these values to our, you know, don't judge people. You know, that's not a good thing to do. And then everybody judges this guy when he's revved up, you know? And
right.
Yeah. I knew that would make the news. I was disappointed that it made the news so much, especially now that I know you heard about it too.
Yeah, well, I just heard about it through some people and I just kind of heard it in passing. I didn't even know the name. I wouldn't have been able to tell you the name. But when you told me what was said, I was like, oh yeah, I did hear about somebody saying stuff like that. One thing that everyone who listens should read, and if you haven't read it, you should read. I don't know the title. I was going to look it up, but our internet's not hooked up right now. And I was going to, it's a thing that David Foster Wallace wrote, and it's published in, I think, the book Consider the Lobster, but I could be wrong. And it's an essay where he talks about, he read this sports autobiography or memoir or whatever of Tracy Austin, who was a youth phenom of tennis. And David Foster Wallace was a tennis player and has written about tennis, not at length, but, you know, at a good amount.
The one book's basically about tennis.
Yeah. Yeah, Infinite Jest is
yeah.
largely about a tennis academy. And so he writes about this book where he read and always reads these sports autobiographies that are written and sort of helped along by, you know, an editor. And they're written by these people who their mind is a total different mindset from the writer. The writer's mindset is to be eloquent and to put things in an artistic way that, like, really can connect with people. But when you read something written by an athlete, it's usually just very basic, you know. And he talks about when they interview athletes after like that one play or that one, you know, that one victory, the answers that you get from the athlete are never satisfactory. It's always like, well, you know, we just really all had to pull together and teamwork mm-hmm. persevered. And, you know, sometimes you just really got to go for it. And it's always these very basic things because they don't work on the thing that they don't think about the art and the actual skill that goes into being able to move that muscle just so,
mm-hmm.
just to get your arm up far enough to reach up and grab the ball that's been chucked. It you know, it's truly...
It's instinctive.
Yes.
Athletes operate on instinct, and how they're coached and drilled is do your job.
Yes.
That it has nothing to do with evaluating. It's right. not like it's not consider, diagnose. It's do your job and then use your instincts to react.
Right. They pay other people to diagnose. They yes. pay other people to watch what you did wrong.
That's what the coaches do. That's yes. the quality control assistant's job.
Yeah. Yep. But it's a fascinating essay, and it's kind of it deals a little bit with that about like what there is a problem when you talk to the athlete about what the athlete just did. Because they're a different mindset. Mm-hmm. They're a whole different person than you or I because of what they're asked to do. And so it's pretty interesting.
Well, I think that ties in nicely to the comparison of the positions. So Richard Sherman's a defensive player. Defensive mm-hmm. players get paid to hit people and take them to the ground.
Yeah.
And take the ball from them. Their job is to do their job and react instinctively.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a quarterback. What's the quarterback's job? Get the play from the coach.
Mm-hmm.
Translate the play to the other players. Line up the players correctly. Look at the defense and diagnose any adjustments that need to be made.
Mm-hmm.
The quarterback is the articulate one mentally when you stop and think about right. how they play the game.
Yep.
So when they grab the quarterback after the game, the quarterback's able to decompress from getting hit by other people because they're not aggressively hitting other people. A, they're trying to avoid getting hit most of the time. B, and then they're able to go, yeah, you know, he had to come in on the in route at 5 yards and we were trying to hit Jimmy on the fade and the safety bit on the in route, so I threw the fade up to the left corner and he just made a heck of a catch.
Yep.
The defensive players don't see it like that. Their job is get this guy off me so I can hit him and mm-hmm. take the ball.
Yep. Yeah.
And so can we really expect a lot of the players who aren't quarterbacks to be able to handle these post-game interviews right away? I don't think we can.
Right.
And I don't think it's fair.
Well, furthermore, we don't know the mindsets of all these people, but yeah, we talk about getting jacked up and being in that game and right after that moment, like, anything can happen with what you might say. Like, I just did this crazy awesome thing. You're riding so high on that, like, you know, who knows what you're going to say, first of all.
Well, you brought Muhammad Ali up. What would Muhammad Ali say? Before or after? I'm the best. I'm the best I've ever done. I'm the best. I'm going to knock his face. I'm going to hit him so hard his kids are going to feel it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And there's something admirable about that,
mm-hmm.
except for the fact that now that everybody with an Instagram and a Facebook also agrees that they are also the baddest motherfucker ever.
Well, and everyone with a Twitter can issue commentary on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But, you know, so everybody's got a voice, everybody's got an opinion, and most of them aren't worth, you know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's crazy, the things that, you know, we ask of the person doing the sport, like the racing driver. They've got to know so much about what they're doing, but can we really expect them to sit down in front of a typewriter and go? And then let's relate it to poetry. William Wordsworth says, and I'm going to butcher this quote exactly, but that poetry is the result of like strong emotion reflected after some time has passed. And so like if you really want an articulate answer to someone about that play, let them settle down a little bit. Take a little time. If you wrote some poetry right now, or if you wrote a story about an ex-girlfriend or an ex-lover or something that meant a lot to you, you would do a better job if you wrote about something that happened 10 years ago than if you wrote about something that just happened. If you wrote about something that just happened, you'd sound like a 10-year-old girl.
When you're too hot, you can't process things correctly. Now, that being said, Richard Sherman probably shouldn't yell at the reporter that he's the best cornerback ever and that Michael Crabtree's a scrub. It's kind of disrespectful and all that. So, yeah, that's disrespectful. But that's that snapshot of Richard Sherman. Listen to him talk. Look at the writing he has up on SportsIllustrated.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the package.
Mm-hmm.
And you, I, everyone in the world has good and bad.
Oh, sure.
You are not good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
You're both.
Yep.
And at certain points in time, one or the other comes out, and the other one doesn't get seen at all.
Yep.
So let's all get off our high horses a little bit there with that.
Yep.
So that's what I think about that, and that's what we think about the Super Bowl, I guess. Number three, going Seahawks still?
I'm not going to change. All right. I mean, they could get him.
Yeah, I'm going Seahawks as well. I wouldn't be shocked if the Broncos win. I think this is going to be a very, very good matchup. You going to watch the game this evening?
No, I got work to do,
mm-hmm.
so I don't think I will.
I think I'm going to watch it. Plus, this is now our second year of podcasting.
We're going on to our third.
Yeah, second year is completed. Yeah, second year is completed. Our third year of podcasting.
We did not meet our goal.
No.
We did not get nearly the stuff recorded. We did not get nearly the things recorded put up this year that we made. We made a pledge that we would.
We're liars. We're bad people.
Well, I just think that, you know, a lot of times we haven't met to pod because we haven't had that much significant to talk about.
Yeah, or that much significant free time. You've right. got a new job. Mm-hmm. I've got additional classes that I'm taking, and my job has kind of changed a little bit. And we've got things on our mind. So the few times we have been able to hang out, we just want to casually hang out.
Yep.
So we said, wait, we're going to try to do 2 a month.
Yeah.
And we ended up doing 1 every 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
So not really what you were talking about at all, but... You know, we can only go up.
We try to think that what we put up is entertaining. Mm. We want to put up a quality product. So if it only comes out every 6 months and it's quality, good.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Speaking of quality, you can obtain your quality. Check us out on quickfast.blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Stitcher now, which is pretty sweet. That's probably the one significant thing we did do this past year was get the Stitcher integration going.
Yep.
So if you got the Stitcher app for iPhone or Android, you can get us on there automatically without having to download. And then you can check us out on our SoundCloud, QuickFastCast.
Yep.
That's what we do.
SoundCloud is where you can catch us first. Mm-hmm. Usually if you're looking, you want the fastest, freshest, as soon as the podcast is done, it's up. The first place it goes is that SoundCloud. And then if you want to wait a few seconds, a little bit, you can check us out, Stitcher and those other ones. It's really very quickly after, but if you're hungry, that SoundCloud will get you right away.
That's where you can eat.
Mm-hmm.
Let them eat, you know. Boys and girls, friends, enemies, haters out there. What we've got on our hands is The Gay Sex Deck by Oliver Pierce with Dr. Sean Cummings, illustrations by John Geary, and my friend number 3 and I draw a card out of the deck. We describe the picture on the face of the card, and then we flip it over to see what the doc has prescribed in terms of your actions. So, here we go, boys and girls, The Gay Sex Deck. Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh, boy. I'm glad you drew this
Every time we are shocked and awed by the pictures.
Now, I would like to add that number 9 is very uncomfortable with the anus.
Yeah, I don't really like a lot of poop, which is what is in the anus. Yeah. I know there's a lot of guys out there that are listening that love the anal sex.
Yeah, and you know who we're talking about.
You're fucking poop.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. That lube, that shit. Okay? Now, I don't want to gross anyone out, but we need to be honest about what's taking place there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not a big anal play guy. I'm not poking fingers in there. I've accidentally slipped in there a couple times in my life. I didn't really enjoy it, and I got the hell out. Okay? I was like a fox thinking I was going into the chicken coop only to find out that the farmer had trapped me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I just wanted to go in there and eat a chicken,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then, oh, no chicken, you got me. And I'm turning out and I'm running,
yep.
you know? And then my erection's ruined and, you know, all sorts of things are bad. Now, let's get to the card.
Yeah, we need to.
All right, so what we've got is our blonde friend.
Mm-hmm.
He's bent over with his left hand on the wall and his right hand in between his legs. We can't see exactly what he's doing, but I think it would be safe to say he's holding on to himself.
Yeah, or fooling around
something.
A little bit.
Yeah, maybe a little self-stimulation of sorts.
You'd almost need it, I think, for this one.
I think so as well. Then a spiky brown-haired fellow is behind him with a grin on his face.
Yeah,
with his left, he's wry, got a grin.
Grin
with his left hand on the small of the back of the other gentleman, and he appears to be using some sort of suppository.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and say it's probably like douche or
a douche.
Not enema. I think that's what a douche is for the rectum. An enema.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen a douche bag. But you hear the word all the time.
Yeah, I've never really heard of anyone actually using douche.
Yeah, I can't, I don't know anything
but,
about
it. Yeah, I'm going to guess enema.
It looks like he's, there's something in our blonde friend's ass.
He's squeezing on a thing
that's
going, and it's not ketchup.
Yeah, it looks like about like a baby powder size thing,
but on the top it's got a funnel and a hose that appears to be going right in between the cheeks. Well, it's right in between the cheeks. There's no debate.
We know where it's going. There's nowhere else for it to go.
No, there isn't. All right, so that's the picture. We're guessing enema of sorts while there's some self-stimulation.
Yeah, I think there'd almost have to be.
Giving your partner an enema. Okay, here we go. Douching!
Douching!
Wow!
Douching! I didn't know you could douche a dude.
Yeah, well, hold on. We're going to find out.
Dude douching.
Here's from the card. This is number 11. What is douching?
I'm so glad it's you.
All right. Douching is the practice of cleaning the bowels by filling them with water, then expelling that water. Isn't that a...
I thought that was an enema.
I did too. It's a way of ensuring that the rectum is squeaky clean, which some men prefer when having anal sex. You might douche before heading out or ask your partner to help you.
There you go.
As a bonding experience.
Never douche before she heads out.
Yeah. Hey, babe, you douche yet?
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to dinner. You better go douche it up real
quick. Douche the front and the back. Yeah. It's going to be a long night.
Well, I guess this helps with my little critique earlier about sticking your dick
in your
shit.
Face.
Yeah, they beat me to it.
Sticking your dick in Brita water at this point. Mm.
Now that maybe could be something we could all get into.
Pure as the driven snow.
All right. Although, you shouldn't have anal sex right away. So here's how you do it, folks. You use a bulb syringe, or if you're incredibly careful with the water flow, a specially made shower attachment.
Wow. I could see that going wrong.
Yeah. If you use a syringe, use plain water, throw away any liquid supplied with it, and never use soap. Lubricate your anus and the syringe, fill it with water, and insert. Relax as if you were taking in a sex toy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad they said that so I would know exactly how to relax.
Yeah, like, wait a minute. I'm a little bit uptight about this douching. I'll just pretend it's a huge dildo that someone's ramming up
my
ass.
Well, why do they have to be huge dildo?
That's what they make.
That's true.
Yeah, who are we kidding? At least compared
to... I've tried to buy small ones and they don't.
You don't want to get your girl's hopes up. All right, you only need to go in far enough to get past the sphincter muscles.
Mm-hmm.
Squeeze
as he's gagging, by
the way. Squeeze the bulb until you feel full, then keep it squeezed as you remove. You may feel as if you want to pee, as the rectum will absorb some of the water, even if you can't feel anything. There will be water there. Hold it in for a few seconds, then release in the shower or over the toilet.
Okay, release over the toilet. Right?
I would say yes, but if you have that shower attachment with the high pressure, I don't think you have a choice.
Where do you get this shower attachment?
Where do you get
the
douche? We're
going to put a link in case people are interested.
I don't know. Oh, God. Now, hold on. Listen. After it says release in the shower or the toilet, it says, yes, there may be some solids, and it will squirt out. This might be the most graphic card we've ever had.
I think we've said that the past four times.
I know. Hold on. Repeat two or three times. Until the water flows out clear.
Well, yeah.
Wait a couple of hours before having sex so that the mucosal lining of the rectum can be reestablished.
You don't... If you take a dirty bowl, you don't just run a little water through and dump.
Right.
You know, if you're going to rinse it out really good, you're going to have to rinse,
rinse
dump,
and rinse.
Rinse, dump, rinse, dump. And that's what you need to think. Rinse, dump, rinse, dump, rinse, dump. Then wait.
And then wait. Okay.
And you're going to wait.
Caution. If you plan to share the douche with anyone else, you must clean it with bleach or disinfect it first. Sharing contaminated equipment is a major health hazard.
All right. So get your own ball
douche.
Syringe.
Yeah.
Turkey baster.
Right.
For your rectum.
Use plain water.
Just regular water. Filtered water? Just plain.
Plain water. Okay. No soap.
Want that fluoride from the city water.
Yep. And then wait a few hours after you expel the solids that will squirt out of your anus and let the rectum mucus reestablish itself.
So you're going to have to really be planning ahead. So now we're planning ahead. Now you look more grossed out than before you read the card.
It's getting to me. I feel a little queasy right now. I'm not even joking. Like the idea... of inserting this douche into your ass.
All right.
Flushing out fluid sporadically and then sitting back and going, I gotta wait for my mucus lining to reestablish itself in my rectum. That's grossing me out.
All right. If we get enough comments on this thread, I will douche number 9.
No, you will not.
You will not do number
because
nine.
I feel like he would be a little more comfortable with it if it happened. And you know what? To make it more fair, I will then let him douche me.
Oh, this is not going to happen at all. I would vomit. I would vomit.
And I would love every second of you vomiting.
Oh my God.
I would let you douche me just to watch you vomit afterwards.
I don't get grossed out by a whole lot, but like the idea of something going in my ass, and no judgment, if that's your thing, that's your thing. But the idea of something going in my ass makes me physically ill.
I know. And that makes me laugh.
Oh, I couldn't do it. Yeah. I couldn't do it.
But it's clean. You're cleaning it.
No, you're not. You're flushing out everything. You gotta let your mucus wall reestablish. Well, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Even that's gross.
You rinse out your mouth. You know, you're gonna have to... I guess, I don't know. That'd be fine.
You don't have... Well, you probably
yeah,
do.
You have mucus on your tongue. The interior. Yeah, your nose true. And everything has mucus, so...
But it's gross. We don't like to deal with mucus.
But you need it, apparently.
Yeah,
you want
you do.
That mucus there for protection.
Wow, that was the most disturbing one we've ever had. The other stuff you can kind of be like, oh, you know, you could do it with a girl, it'd be all right, or if other people are doing it.
You could douche a girl.
I wouldn't want to.
Well, and then,
I said you could do it with a girl and it'd be all right, or you could do it, you know, other people are doing it with guys and it's all right. The idea of sticking something up your ass and then flushing out solids and mucus is disgusting.
They depicted that as if, like, you should douche your partner. Right?
Yeah, that's what the card showed.
Okay. You shouldn't. No. Now, I'm way more comfortable with the anus than number nine, mm-hmm. All right? But I would not douche a girl's anus because I know what's going to happen. Okay, so here's the deal. You squirt some water up there, fill it up with some water. I don't know, maybe she jumps around to let it kind of... You know.
Oh my God.
Oscillate.
Yeah, I guess.
And then she's going to hopefully go to the toilet. Do the toilet route. Don't do the shower. It's disgusting. Go to the toilet. And then basically she's going to have like the worst diarrhea. She's like pure liquid and then some
solids. I can't
keep
talking about this. This is seriously disgusting.
Well, what I'm getting to is always douche yourself.
Yes.
If there's douching to be done, you douche yourself, gentlemen and ladies.
And those are the words that we need to go out on. I'm a very disturbed number nine. That's my friend number three.
I think we've got a title for this episode.
Yep, you need to do what the fuck you gotta do, and you gotta remember...
If there's no victim...
There's no crime.